And again, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's TechNet webcast, Microsoft.com Operations Introduces Real-World Debugging, Diagnosing Memory Leaks in ASP.NET Applications. And before we get started, I'd like to hand the floor over to our MC, Chris Adams.
Well, thank you, Tracy, and I appreciate it. Welcome, everybody. For those of you on the West Coast, welcome to an early rising morning. For those that are ready to crank up, I'm going to do something a little bit different today. I'm going to ask you to go ahead and give us feedback to us to let us know that you're ready to go. If you're having any problems with audio or anything, let us know in that way that Tracy can deal with that. So go on to the feedback to presenter. Go ahead and change your seat color to yellow. When everybody's turned over to yellow, we'll know that we're ready to rock and roll. But until then, let me go ahead and quickly introduce a few things to you. We are very happy to have the Microsoft.com operations group come over to the IS Webcast Series and certainly present some of this excellent information that they're presenting this week. You can always find out anything relating to what is going on in the IS Webcast Series by visiting www.iswebcastseries.com. So make sure you put that in the back of your brain there, www.iswebcastseries.com. With that said, it looks like most of you are turning over to yellow. I do want to remind you of a few things. Number one, we'll be taking questions in the queue throughout the presentation, so do not hesitate if you have any questions. In fact, some of them we might even address throughout the presentation. We'll also follow up at the conclusion, and everything that is being done today by Jim will be recorded, obviously, for you to download this presentation, but also his demos. We will make sure that you have available to you those scripts. You can do those by visiting the blog after this week's presentations at blog.technet.com/MSCom, or you also could email iswcast@microsoft.com. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our presenter today in the Microsoft.com Real World Debugging, Diagnosing Memory Leaks in ASP.NET Applications. Jim Dobbin is a senior systems engineer, comes from the background of where I came from, which is product support. That means you should give him even more attention than you normally do. Jim is with the Microsoft Debug Operations Group and is going to talk to us today about this awesome topic. Jim, take it away.
Thanks, Chris. Let's go ahead and get rolling here. So what we're going to cover today, basically using the native Microsoft Windows debuggers, I'm going to be talking about memory-related commands available in the native debuggers. We're looking at Win32 memory, also using the managed SOS or Son of Strike debugging extension and the memory-related commands there for investigating memory issues in managed code. It's going to be a fairly demo-intensive session, I think. Most of the time I'll be spending in the Windows debuggers and sharing that application out so you can actually see what I'm doing. And time permitted, we will also go through an exception, debugging exception issue, complete with some assembly code. Nothing too complex, but maybe just a good little intro into some assembler. Prerequisite knowledge to be better for you to keep up with us if you've got a familiarity with the Windows native debuggers. Familiarity with .NET managed code. Some of the concepts with the .NET garbage collected heap or the GC heap. And like I said, there will be some assembly, so some assembly required. Not actually required, but there'll be some there. And so basically our agenda, I'm going to go over the native commands, and then we'll actually go through the commands in the debugger, and we'll debug some memory problems and some exception issues. So let's get started. Memory leaks. Basically, hopefully everyone caught Jeff Johnson's presentation earlier this week on determining problems and initial debugging steps. I'm going to try to build on that some by using the Windows debuggers to investigate memory issues. So once you've determined you have a memory leak and narrowed it down to managed or a native, what we generally do is start by attaching a debugger to the process. One clarification on the terms, when I say native, I'm talking about the native Win32 environment and outside of managed code. And managed code basically equals the .NET framework code and CLR managed memory and the garbage collected heaps. Remember, debugging in this manner is intrusive, so we do it in a test environment or in on a production server, but a server that's obviously been pulled out of production load, out of rotation, and no longer taking live traffic. The debugger needs symbols, so to make sure we have a good symbol path. We use an internal server for our sim path, but on the debugger website, it tells you how to use our public symbol server over HTTP. There's a really good section there on symbols. And in the reference section of my slides here, there will be pointers to the various sites that I'm talking about. So basically, if perfmon tells us our growth is in private bytes of the process, we start looking at our heaps, both native and the GC heap. To determine we have a managed memory leak, we'll look at the CLR counters for heap and generation sizes. If those numbers seem to account for our memory usage, then we want to investigate further with the SOS extension. Now, virtual bytes, if we see growth in virtual bytes, then we're probably looking at possibly a fragmentation issue, too many DLLs loaded, too many dynamic assemblies being loaded, that type of thing. So DLLs and assemblies. And remember, ASPX page and the code behind files are compiled into a DLL and loaded into the process address space. Dynamic assemblies are similar, but don't generally persist on disk in a DLL form. Several of the .NET built-in classes will compile and load dynamic assemblies. Some examples are XFLT transforms, script blocks, and some uses of the XML serializer. So let's start by taking a look at some of the commands available to us in the Windows debugger package. First one is the bang address command, and we use the shortcut bang for the apostrophe. Or not the apostrophe, but the exclamation point here. So when I say bang, I'm really talking about the exclamation point and then the command. And that just designates to the debugger that that's basically coming out of an extension. So that's actually how you type it into the debugger, bang address. So the bang address command, what that gives us is shows you all the regions of your virtual memory, displays all the regions there. I like to use it with the dash summary switch. It just gives you a good summary of how the process of memory is being used. And here's a little breakdown here. Region usage is VAD, or virtual Alex. Since the GC uses the virtual Alex for its memory, this is where, you know, your GC memory, heap memory, will show up. The other ones here, region usage free, or if that's your free memory, usage image, obviously your DLLs, usage stack, those are your thread stacks, how much memory is being taken up by thread stacks, usage tab is your thread environment blocks, and usage heap, region usage heap, is actually your native Win32 heap. And then you've got region usage page heap, which is mainly used for debugging. If you've got some special debugging switches set up for doing page heap or debugging of the actual native Win32 heap. And then we've got process params and usage environment block. Hopefully you won't see any memory growth in those. Those are going to usually be pretty much static. Not real big. So the next command, bang heap, this will give you information about the native heap or the Win32 heap. This is outside of the managed world. This is your native Win32 heap, but some of the ASP.NET components do use, are written in native code, and they do use some of the native heaps in here too. There's a lot of commands, many switches to bang heap. They're documented in the debugger help docs, and I'm not really going to have time to go over all of them today, and it's kind of out of the scope of what we're talking about, but I wanted to point out the dash S summary switch. It gives you a quick snapshot to see if you have any leak in the native heaps. I highly recommend looking at the debugger's help files, as it's the documentation for the debuggers. If you have a leak in the native heaps, you should probably look at some tools like UMDH and LeakDiag to help track those down. I believe UMDH comes with a debugger package, and LeakDiag is available for download from www.microsoft.com. Next command is bang va dump. This displays all the virtual memory ranges of your process. The output here, I like to use this one with the dash V switch, the verbose, just because it includes info about each original alloc. And I don't know of any other way to get that information. This helps to group your addresses by allocation or owner. The output can be pretty lengthy, so it's best to open a log file first to capture this info, and then use that, go back to refer to that if you have to. With the debuggers and the various extensions, there are often multiple ways to look at the same type of data. So SOS has a few other commands that are similar to this, vmmap and vmstat, which really examine the same data, and I'll show these a little bit later on when we start talking about the SOS commands. Next command, native command bang peb. PEBs display the info from the process environment block. This command shows you binaries, their load address, the timestamp of the module. The reason I like this one is it shows you the load path of where the actual DLL came from on the file system. So looking at this output here, we can see exactly where the files originated from. Like I said before, there's a lot of ways to do this to get the same kind of info. LM is another one, display loaded modules, and it has a V-switch, so you can get some more verbose output. It's a little bit less info than the bangpeb, but it's a good quick way to take a look at your loaded modules as well. Useful if you're trying to track down assembly leaks, too many DLLs, memory fragmentation in that kind of way. So on to the SOS extensions and the commands that are available to us there. We have first one is bang EE heap, and this basically displays info about the garbage collected heap. It has a couple of switches. Just do it by itself, you get both. If you want to limit it to just the GC heap info, you just use the minus GC switch, and that just gives you the GC info, and then, or the minus loader switch will only include info on the loader heaps. And it's a good quick way to confirm, what you were seeing in your pervmon. Dump heap. So dump heap blocks the GC heap and dumps every object or dumps selected objects with some of the different switches that it has. You can do a minus stat to give you a statistical type summary with the count and size of the various objects you have there. You can use the minus MT switch and dump objects with a specific method table given. You can also do a minus min switch and dump objects of at least the minimum size. There's several other switches for that, and I'd recommend looking at the SOS, the help command in SOS. It covers all those, but these are probably going to be the ones I'm going to be talking about in today's debug session, so I'm not going to cover all of them, but I will be covering what I typically use. GC root. So this is one of the key commands that basically scans the thread stacks, handle tables, and finalizer queue for references to an object. So if you've got an object that's not being collected away, this is going to tell you who's holding a reference to it and why it's still around in the memory. Finalize queue, this prints out info about the objects that are in the finalize queue. This is useful if you have, if you're seeing a lot of objects hanging around in the finalize queue. Typical problem is where you have, you're creating objects that are disposable faster than the finalizer queue can keep up. And here's the VM map command, similar to the VA dump command. Dumps info about the virtual address space. Similar data to what we saw in the VA dump command, just a little more condensed output, probably a little bit easier to read. You've got a virtual, if you're looking at virtual memory issues, definitely, you know, these are the types of commands you want to look at. And then DMSTAT basically just gives you a summary view of your virtual address space. So let's go ahead and dive into one of the debuggers here.
Hey, Tim, real quick, before you do that, I was just curious. These commands are very useful across the native and the managed stack, but do you just usually jump in? Can you maybe, and that's what you're probably going to do here in the memory commands, but do you usually jump in with these commands, or do you do more general? You typically see, you know, the KVs, the KDs, and the Ks. Do you use those first to really start exploring, or do you jump straight in?
Well, when you're looking at a memory issue, right, the K commands and stuff like that, those are going to give you a stack.
Exactly.
Right.
So you're saying that this is specific to a specific scenario, and you already have the information in hand that, hey, I've got a memory problem.
Right.
You go straight into these commands. I just want to make sure that they're aware of how you usually approach it. Do you do more general? But in this case, it sounds like you don't.
Well, like I said, I was kind of following up with, you know, what Jeff mentioned on his Monday session, right? We've done some initial investigation through perfmon. We've narrowed their focus down, right? We know we have a memory problem. So what's using that memory?
That's perfect. So I just want to make sure that they're aware that you're already at a certain stage before you jump in and start using these commands.
No problem. Perfect. Okay. Okay. So this is the Windows debugger, and I'm going to use it. I'm going to attach to one of my worker processes on my machine. And I'll pick the first one right here. And when I'm doing these demos, if you need to see a full screen view, go ahead and press the F5 key. Press your F5 key, will give you a full screen view. Okay, so I've attached to my process. You can see it broke in. Basically, right now at this point, this worker process is not serving any requests. This is what I mean by an intrusively debugging. So you don't want to do this definitely on a live site or anything like that. So first thing I want to do is open up a log file, so that we can record all these commands. And make them available later to you guys so you can review the log files. So I did a dot log open to open the log file. So everything I type now will show up in this log file, and you guys will be able to download that and take a look at where I went and commands I used and their output. So let's start with the bang address summary. So that basically scans through the memory and gives us this summary output again. So we can see right now our region usage is bad. It's pretty low. We're not using much, 6% here. Our free memory is 91%. No real problems yet. This is just a worker process that just started up, just warmed it up. There's really no memory leak here yet. So that's our bang address command. One other note here, you can see this is a, you can see I have almost 3 or almost 4 gigs of free memory here. So I'm working on a 64-bit server. It's running, the worker processes are 32-bit, so I'm running the 32-bit worker process, and that's how I get the 4 gig memory space available. It's a 32-bit worker process, so I'm attaching to it with the 32-bit debugger, or the x86 debugger. And, okay, so next command, let's take a look at our native heaps. So you can see the heaps here, the heap output. It's listed by, basically, by heap handle. We have head flags. Those aren't too interesting to us, but it does show us how much memory each heap has reserved, committed, virtual, and what our free is, and what type of it is, what type of heap it is. Fast heap over here means it's, L means it uses lookaside lists, and if you look down here a little bit, we can see one heap here is using LFH, or the low fragmentation heap, which was a recent addition to the heap manager. And the next command, bang va dump minus v. Okay, this one takes a little bit of time. It spews out a lot of information. Like I said, I like to use the dash v switch, so it includes the information about each original allocation region as well. If you caught Jeff Stuckey's session yesterday, you saw that the CLR grabs large chunks of VM space via virtual alloc when it initializes. When I get to the GC heap segments, we can take a look at what those look like from the VA dump output. So that's what our VA dump output looks like. We've got a base address, allocation base, tells us what the protection state is, page read-only, the state, memory is reserved, this one here, page no access, and then private. We'll go through a little bit more of these in some of the further debugging we do here. And let's look at bang pad. Again, why I like this command is it shows us the actual load path where the DLL came from on the system. Base address that we've got, a timestamp of the DLL itself. So kind of some helpful info there. And then we also have the LN command, which gives us similar info, the start and end address of the module name, so start and end address of the module and the module names, so we can see just a little bit of an abbreviated list here of our modules loaded. So let's move on to the managed debugger extension, SOS. Since I'm using the Windows debugger, it saves what they call workspaces, and already saved in my workspace, I have the SOS command already loaded. So I can just do a bang ee heap minus qc, and we can take a look at that info. So what we see here, initially number of GC heaps is 2. Obviously I'm running the server GC. This is a dual proc box. So we get 1 heap per process, per processor. Tells us in any heap where our generations start. And the something new to WIDBI, there's a few segments that are internal, kind of for internal use for the GC. So these really don't concern us too much. Our real segment is this third one here, the 0367 segment. And you can see where our large object heap segments start. And down here for our heap number 1, we've got the segment and our large object heap segment over there. So going back to the VA dump output, I want to find, hopefully we haven't scrolled it off the screen here. So let's take a look at one of the first segment here of the GC heap. It's got a space on the end. So you can see we first find it up here and in the allocation base. Remember I talked about the dash B switch and the allocation base. So you can see several segments all have the same allocation base. And then here's the first base address with that allocation base. This is basically how the GC allocate on initialization, it just grabs a big chunk of memory and then segments it up for its different heaps. So the allocation base being the same here on all these different segments, we can see these all came from the initial GC initialization. Then we can take a look at them here. So we have their protection, page read write. It's status reserve memory. This one's memory private. You can look at the first one here. You can see this one is actually committed. So we start with committed memory at the bottom and start working up, and then we have basically the region size here. You can see this is our reserve space, but we haven't used it yet. We haven't committed it. This is committed, and this is space available for this segment to keep using. Now it's reserved, but just needs to be committed as it gets used. Okay. So the next one is dump heap. And this basically dumps every object in the heap and then provides you with a statistical listing at the end here of all your objects. And you go back up here to the top. So you can see the individual objects themselves and their sizes, and then it transitions over into a statistic here where you can see it. So the first column is our method table of an object, the count, how many objects are in the heap, the total size, and then basically our class names. So, like I said, this is a worker process that's just warmed up. No memory leak yet, so this would be a good way to compare back to after we've got a memory leak. We could go back and look at some of these objects and see where we're seeing our growth in here. And I will go through some of the different switches of dump heap later on in the other demos. So so what we would have to do next would be to find an object and run, if we wanted to find an object that's still existing here and see where it's rooted, we use the GC root command. So GC root just takes an object and basically scans for the references to it. This object that I picked here, doesn't look like it has any roots, so it exists on the heap, but just hasn't been collected away yet. Next one is finalized queue. And like I said, this prints out stats about the objects in the finalized queue. Here's our objects that are finalizable. None of these are from me. These are all internal. My code's pretty simple. I don't have any disposable objects, so I won't really see anything in here. But it's not uncommon to see, you know, objects in the finalized queue ready to be finalized. So other command I was mentioned earlier is the VM map. It gives us the same data that VA dump does, but in a little more condensed format here. Let's scroll too far, sorry about that. So we can see our regions, start, stop, their length, the alloc protect, the protects the states, pre-committed, reserved, and then the type as well. So you can see private, map, different types there. And the next command is vmstat, which just gives you a statistical output of your VM. Minimum sizes, maximum sizes, averages, of what the different ones are. So a type 3, we can see minimum is 4K, maximum. In the small, I've got 64K. In large, I've got much bigger blocks available there. Again, these commands are good, useful for looking up, trying to track down our virtual memory problems. But today what I'm going to be looking at is primarily memory leaks in private bytes, or basically GC heap memory leaks. So let's really finish up this session here. Let me do a close log to close off that log close. Close off the log there. And I can do a .detach to free up my process again. It's now up and running and be serving requests again. So I'll go ahead and quit from this session for now. And we'll come back to that a little bit later. So So debugging a memory problem, again, you have to determine where the leak is, right? Is it in private bytes? Is it in the CL? Does it appear to be in the CLR heap? We want to look at the CLR heap perf counters. And if those basically are high, we know that we're probably looking at a managed leak. We want to take a look at our Gen 0, 1, 2, and large object heap sizes. But if the CLR heaps don't seem to approach where our private bytes are at, then we might be looking at a native leak. So in that case, we would probably want to look at using tools like LeakDiag and UMDH. Virtual bytes, again, looking at your virtual bytes. If your virtual bytes far exceed your private bytes, then you're probably looking at some kind of memory fragmentation, which is caused by somebody reserving memory but not committing it. The CLR heap does a pretty good job of preventing fragmentation, because each time it does a collection, it usually does a compaction as well. So fragmentation is probably going to be outside of the managed heap. And, of course, again, use the thing VA dump and the VA stat and VM map commands to look at your virtual memory bytes. So let's put these to practical use and see what we can find. So back to our debugger again. I've run a stress client against my worker process, And hopefully I've leaked a little bit of memory now, so we can take a look at that. Make sure I'm logging onto the right one here. Okay. Okay, so since our focus today is mainly on managed memory, and my perfmon data tells me private bytes or committed memory is darn, I'm going to narrow my focus down to the heaps, basically both managed and native heaps. So let's start again by looking at the bang address summary command and see where our memory growth is. let's see. I want to make sure I'm on the right worker process here. So I've got two. Another thing that bangpeb is useful for, you can look at your command line of your worker process, and I can see that if I'm in my leaf command map pool, so I'm on the right one here. So go back to the bang address summary again. We can see we've got a little bit of memory usage now. Our memory usage is in region usage is bad. So it's grown a little bit. Region usage heap seems to have stayed pretty flat. Not too much growth there. But let's take a look at our bang heap status output and see what we can see there. Again, looking at the heap handles here. The first heap handle is typically your base process heap. So anybody that hasn't called the create heap or heap create API, they'll probably be using this one. We can see we don't have a lot of growth in there, so we look pretty good. So let's take a look at the EE heap output again. See if we've got any growth in there. Not much really going there. Well, we can see some. We can see we're up to 52 megs up there in our one segment. And this one here's got some memory increase in there as well. But we haven't extended any heaps yet, so let me try this. Let me go ahead and go this process and run my stress client on here a little bit and see if I can get some more heap usage. Okay, let's go ahead and break back in and rerun our heap command, minus GC. Yeah, it was getting close. You can see this heap segment here is almost filled. A heap segment is 64 meg in the 32-bit world, so we're getting close there, so let me go ahead and go it again and continue with my stress client here.
So Jim, real quick, what exactly are we trying to reproduce here, just to make sure that everybody's following if they've been asking questions?
We're going to go through some leaky memory.
Okay, so you have an application you're stressing that you're trying to...
Yeah, I've got an ASPX page that I'm hitting. You can see right now it's throwing a few exceptions.
So you're leaking memory and you're wanting to show kind of an extreme case so that the numbers look fairly easy to identify.
Yeah, they'll get more extreme as I move on in the demo. This is going to be a little more subtle.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everybody was still familiar with what you were doing when these exceptions were throwing up here.
Yeah, no problem. Feel free to jump in with any questions if you think I'm not covering something. So, still waiting for my stress client here. We can probably go ahead and break in. Now. And we'll rerun our EEC command. And now we can see, we've added another segment here to our heap. Right, so both of these segments here have had to have been extended because we've exceeded the 64 megs in there. So we can obviously see we've got some growth here in the managed heap. Let's see if we can find out what's taking up this memory. So the next thing I would do would be a dump heap minus stat, because I just want to get the statistics here. So this is arranged by size and count here, so we can see the very last item, that's our biggest offender of memory, and you can see it's a system byte array. And we've got over 8,000 of them, basically, here as far as the count, and we're using 180, almost 180 megs of memory on that one. So I made my demo so the leak is a little more obvious to kind of illustrate the methods here, but the methods used are pretty much the same regardless. It just may not be as obvious when you're debugging, you know, actual live code. So note the size and the count of objects here. Obviously, there's something that's holding references onto the system byte array. So let's dump all of those out with a dump heap minus MT. And this first entry right here, that's our method table. So what we're going to do here is we're going to say dump heap, give me all the objects out of the heap that match this method table. That's not really enough there. Oh, there we go. Okay, so took a little time there. A little bit lags. So you can see what we've got here. There's appears to be a bunch of objects, all about the same size, that are causing the heap to grow. So let's go ahead and just pick one of these at random, and let's do a GC root on it to see who's holding the reference to it. So this is our GC root output. Again, here's our object here at the bottom of the chain, our system byte array. You can see that it's the first one that holds a reference to it is the system.web.caching cache entry. Let's take a look at another one here just to see if it's the same pattern. The root, same thing. You can see, yep, we're definitely, all these objects appear to be rooted to the caching objects, the system.web.caching classes. So we can take a look at the very first object that has a reference to ours, the system.web.caching.cache entry, and we can dump that object. And this basically gives us the dump object command, or bang do. This basically gives us the members of this class. And the one that we're probably most interested in here is the key. Right, so we'll take the key out, and we'll dump that, because that's basically a string. The system.web.caching is basically a key value pair, where you identify something with the key name, and then you cache the value. So we can see here that the string, or the key, is my cache item with basically a random number on it. So somebody is caching a fairly large objects in the cache here, these byte arrays are being cached. Obviously, that was made to illustrate the point of cache abuse and its effect on memory. At this point, we would probably take a look at, our source code, get involved with the developer, find this cache key name, and look for, the cache.adds or inserts, and look at what type of objects are being cached, and if it's an efficient use of the cache. And also, are they specifying a reasonable cache expiration? Like Jeff mentioned yesterday in his session, this is one of our most common memory issues. Cache is a great feature, but it has to be used wisely. Poor use of cache looks just like a memory leak. These cache objects survive collection and end up living in Gen 2 heap. And so as the generation grows, the GC collections become more and more expensive, basically, leading to higher GC, percent time in GC. So that's what the cache looks like. I'm going to go ahead and go to, didn't want to go it. Detach from it. And go ahead and run my script a little bit more. Take a look at maybe a little bit different looking memory leak this time. So I've broken back into the same process. Let's take a look at my, hit it with a little more load. Let's take a look at our address summary memory again. And you can see we're using more and more memory in our region is bad. So basically in this bucket, we're getting more and more memory usage, and our region usage tree is going down. So we've had pretty considerable growth here, and let's take a look at our EEF info again. So it looks a little bit different now. We can see the large object heaps now have had to have been extended several times. And all of these are pretty much full. So now we're seeking what looks like to be a large object. And large object is basically anything greater than 85K. It has to be handled in a little bit different way by the GC. So let's take a look at our dump heap output again. And we can see more growth in the byte arrays. I like to leave that one. It's fairly easy and grabs a fair amount of memory in a hurry. So again, let's dump those out again with our dump heap method table. Take a little bit here to get all the output. Okay, well, there's some of the objects. And now that we can see they're even bigger now, they're each one of these byte arrays is 1 meg. So obviously getting bigger. So let's take a look at, pick one of these at random. We'll GC root it. And we can see our byte array here, and the first object that references it is actually a page, the ASP class, leafmem_ASPX. So that's basically an ASPX page right there. and we can see, looking further up the chain here, we can see that that's referenced by a button-click event handler, and system object array, button-click event handler, and then the notification, basically a notification class there. Let's just take another one of these at random here. I'm sure we'll do the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing. So basically, what's going on here is these objects are basically being referenced by a static event handler. Besides the byte arrays that are being leaked, the pages themselves are being leaked. So each one is a different object. You'll see here this page. So we're actually leaking page objects, and we're leaking the byte arrays. The byte arrays are basically just part of the page object. We'll dump out the thing here, and we can see it has a reference to our. Here's our reference to our byte array. Has a notification class. We can see that that's static. So, just quickly, what's going on here is we've got a static event handler in an ASPX page, and every time the page is hit, it subscribes to the static event handler, causing basically the memory leak here. So I hope that gives you the general idea of tracking down why objects may live longer than you expect and how to start debugging some of the issues. I'm going to go ahead and close my log. Oops, I think I forgot to close to do that log. I'll save that one. Save that output so we can get that. And back to the slides. So, now for something completely different, let's take a look at some debugging an exception scenario. So, what I'm looking at debugging, this is I'm not debugging a null reference exception. So, what is a null reference exception? A null reference exception is an attempt to dereference a null object reference, which is really just an access violation, first chance AV, that's handled by the CLR and turned into a managed exception. The exception information itself is rarely specific enough to tell you what object is null. The stack trace may not be enough, so sometimes these are obscured. And in some cases, like a web service, it's hard to get a stack trace and figure out what object is actually null. And if you have some kind of handler installed that logs your exceptions, you're not going to get enough information in the exception itself usually to fix the problem. In the case of a web service that's throwing this type of exception, it's a little harder to get a local repro. If you've got an ASPX page that's throwing this and you can hit it locally, usually you can get the stack, just by hitting localhost and the page, and you'll get if your custom errors are set right, you'll get the stack trace in your browser. But if you can't do that, this is what I use to track these down. So here's what the null reference exception looks like. You can see it's got a message object, but there's really all this is your null reference exception message. There's really not a lot of useful information in the actual exception itself. But since we know this is actually an AV, we can break on an AV. We can break earlier, basically, on the AV with the FXE AV command instead of breaking on CLR exceptions. So you'll notice we break. This is once I set that SXE AV. You'll notice we break on a line that is basically CNP or compare ECX with what ECX points to. Or basically compare the value in ECX to what ECX points to. So why would anyone want to do that? Well, it's just a quick null reference check. If the object is null, it'll throw an AB. The CLR exception handler will catch it and turn it into a system.null reference exception. So let's go ahead and take a look at one of these in the debugger. I'm going to attach to a different worker process this time, hopefully, and we'll go ahead and go it. And I've just hit my repro page, and you can see we've got an access violation, first chance, followed by a couple of CLR exceptions. So digging deeper, let's break again, and let's SXEAV. We'll go it. And I'll hit the repro again. And we'll see that we've broken on the command compare ECX with what ECX points to. And you can see here that it's pointing to basically address 0. And address 0, or that whole range, or that whole region in VA dump, if you look at the VA dump output, you'll notice that that one is marked as no access. So it's done that. It's set that for a reason, just for this reason, to catch null pointers. So we can see where we were at. This is our basically when we break in, we get all the registers of the processor, where it tries to resolve what function we were in and the current instruction that we broke at. So another command from SOS is the NU command, or unassemble. So I'm going to unassemble our current instruction pointer, or this is where we broke at. It's a little bit here.
While we're waiting for that, Jim,
uh-huh.
The customer had a question that I was hoping I might throw towards you.
Sure.
Are there all of this that you're doing, and we've heard a couple times that you highly recommend to not do this in production and to take it out of rotation, they were wondering if there are any suggestions on how to accomplish this on a live site, or how could they effectively grab the data and do it on their dev site while not taking anything out of rotation.
Well, with the memory leaks, you can always go with you can always collect a memory dump. And look at that offline. But that's still going to be a little bit intrusive while you're collecting that memory dump. What we use in the architecture we have, we have several servers and NLB clustered servers, so we can easily pull one, drain one server and suspend it from rotation to do our debugging on.
Would you recommend things, obviously you can use 80+ to do that memory dump. Would you also, or what about debug diagnostics? There's been a couple of questions around those. Maybe you could address that and then get back to the dump here.
Sure. Those are good utilities as well. We use kind of a variation of 80+ for doing our debugging and, capturing dumps. So very often we will capture a dump, or one of the web SEs will capture a dump, and then we'll take a look at that offline, afterwards. So that's not as intrusive, right, because we've got a dump. But when you're working with the framework, our framework 2.0, there's besides the SOS extension, there's a support DLL called MS Core DAC Works, or DAC, DACWKS. And you have to have that in your symbol path or in the same path where you loaded your SOS extension from. and those have to match up with the framework version you're running. They all do come or ship with the framework. So it's just one other thing you have to know when you're working with a DOM. The debugger also gives you if it can't find it, it gives you a very clear message on what to do to correct the problem, too, if you do run into that.
So everything you're doing here is reproducible, basically post-mortem.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you could, well, this is what I'm doing, a live debug right now of this exception, so you probably, it's hard to get a dump of an exception, right? You really need to look at an exception while it's happening.
Okay, so some of this is not reproducible. I think that's what is core, that sometimes you just can't avoid this.
Right, sometimes you just can't avoid it. Memory investigations are easy to do offline because the memory grows, right, and you can dump that process and it stays there, right? The memory is still in use when you get a dump or dump the process. But some issues like this one, you couldn't work off of a dump.
Okay.
Because once the request is done, right, everything falls out of scope and gets collected away.
That makes sense.
So this information would be gone.
I think that it probably answers their question as to sometimes it's avoidable, but there is an option that they could try otherwise.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, then you just go to a live debug and there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah. Right. And the IIS debug toolkit and the 80 plus stuff is also very good for doing this kind of thing as well. We tend to just go dive straight in with the debuggers. A lot of that stuff is just wrappers around the debuggers, right?
Absolutely.
Scripts and stuff like that, so we just go straight to the debuggers.
Yeah, they're more of automation tools more than they are analysis tools.
Exactly.
Right? And you guys go straight to the analysis. Getting a hold of the data is not necessarily your issue.
Exactly. Okay, so let's get back to this one here. So this is the bangu command, and you can see right here, it prints out, it tells us where, the nice thing about the bangu command is it'll go through and unassemble a whole managed method for you. So it looks for the start and goes to the beginning, and it gives you an address. When you gave it an address range, or when I gave it an address range of the current instruction pointer, it marks that within that function where I was at. So that's where we broke, and that's where we're currently at. So basically, we AVD referencing our ECX register. So let's track back and see where ECX came from in this case. So the next line up above it, you can see we move EBX into ECX. Moves go right to left. So we can see EBX was moved into ECX just before this. And then up above, a little bit further, we don't see EBX being touched anywhere. We can see ESI is being moved into EBX. Right here. And then right above that, so where did ESI come from? Well, ESI came from the next line up, from EAX was moved into ESI, and you'll notice that follows a call to another function. So generally, EAX is usually the return value from a method call. So we can deduce from this that this call did not return a value, or it returned basically a null value, and that's why we hit the AV here. So in this case, the config util get logon URL method needs to be investigated. So just cutting to the chase here, what happened in this one, the method itself is just fine. What that was doing was basically getting a value from the configuration information, and there was just a missing value in the configuration. So when we called git logon URL, we don't have anything in config for it, so we basically return a null. And then when we try to use that, we basically AV here. So the solution would be to put the missing value back into our web config file. And that's basically it for for my that's it for my talk today. In summary, the debuggers and the SOS extension are very powerful tools, and don't be afraid to use them and go out there and learn them. There's a lot of good resources out there. Add them to your toolbox. Like anything, the more you use it, the more comfortable you are with it, and the more you can do with them. I just touched on just a very small portion of the commands that are available in the debuggers. There's a lot more out there. I encourage everyone to go out there, download the debugger package, look through the docs file, start playing around with it and learning how to do it. And assembly code can be fun.
Are you being serious there, Jim, or what?
Not really, but it helps to have some of the basics down.
We're trying to motivate folks. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can if you know at least some of the basics, you don't have to know a lot. But if you know some of the basics, it definitely helps when you're debugging. So that's pretty much it for me. I want to thank everybody for attending today. I hope they take something away. I hope they learn something from it. I'll toss it back to Chris.
Awesome, and one of the things I want to make sure that everybody says is there's possible free stuff coming, so don't run too far, because these folks are listening intensively to find out what exactly your feedback is about Jim's presentation today. Jim, you did an awesome job. It's a very difficult topic to talk about because of the fact that there's not a lot of slides. It's mostly demos. So you did a wonderful job, and I want to thank you for coming over and presenting this topic for us. So with that said, I want to make sure that everybody is aware we are not done. Ladies and gentlemen, we do have two more days of this nitty-gritty good stuff. So if you're interested, make sure you come back and join us tomorrow. We have Khalil joining us to do his presentation. And then on Friday, we also have Chris St. Amon, who will also share a little bit of an insight into how they're trying to make, or how they We are trying to make this a little bit easier with IS7. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and pull up a slide here. Make sure that you do review the Microsoft.com Thursday and Friday presentation, as well as you can also see any other webcasts that we'll have upcoming in the IS webcast series. So with all that said, let's make sure we take a quick peek here at what some of the webcast resources that you can take advantage of. There's plenty of them. Make sure you find these guys. They're popular. They're very much demanded. As well as yesterday, I did not mention that these guys are going to have several events at Windows Connections, which is sponsored by or co-sponsored by Microsoft and Windows Magazine. And I want to make sure and encourage you to go to that, as well as we will also bring them along with us to TechEd in Boston, so feel free to join that. With that said, I'm going to go ahead and thank everybody for taking the time to come and visit. Make sure you fill out your survey, and with that said, I'm going to turn it back over to Tracy.
Great. Thanks, Chris. And remember, for more information, everyone can print a PDF of today's session. It looks like there was a lot of valuable information in those slides. So to do that, just go to the File menu in your navigation bar. And we will be getting into the questions and answers here shortly, so go ahead and feel free to submit your questions now. Also, I'm going to be posting a survey here in just a minute, so please do take a moment to fill those out for us. Your feedback is appreciated. And for upcoming and previously recorded webcasts, you can go to Microsoft.com/webcast. And here you can access the first two sessions in this series. And this webcast will be available in about 24 hours to view or download. And also, take note of this URL here. If you have any webcast content ideas, if there's something that you haven't seen yet, we would love to hear from you. And today's webcast was presented using Microsoft Office Live Meeting. You can get a free 14-day trial by visiting the following link. And for everyone who fills out the survey for today's webcast, you'll be automatically entered in to win a Windows Media Player. So just take a couple minutes to fill that out for us, and this gives you a little incentive to do so. And here's the survey. Please follow the links that we provided to complete today's webcast evaluation. And I'm going to go ahead and hand it back over so we can address some of the questions we have in the queue.
Awesome. It looks like we do have some good questions. Hey, Jim. out of curiosity, what Perfmon counters do you recommend for folks to look at for ASP.NET apps?
Well, for ASP.NET apps, I mean, if you're looking at memory.
Memory, obviously. I apologize. I don't think that word was in there, but memory cases in regards to ASP.NET.
Yeah, so you're going to be looking at the .NET CLR memory counters, and there'll be instances in there for your different worker processes. And so you've got basically bytes and all heaps, I think. I don't have it up in front of me here. But you have bytes and all heaps, basically. You have different gen sizes, like gen 0 size in heaps, gen 0, gen 1, gen 2, and then you've also got a large object heap counter as well. So those will just basically just tell you the sizes of memory that your worker processes or the CLR is using for you in the managed memory space.
Cool. Somebody also asked about, they also did a great presentation, by the way. They started the question off by that, but give you that kudo. But one question they asked is, what about debugging JavaScript in IE? And I know this is not server-side, it's client-side, but what are any suggestions you might have for resources or something of that nature? Is there any out there?
That's not something that I do a lot of. I'd have to research that and get back to you. Maybe we can post something on our
blog. Also, you're welcome to email us at iswcast@microsoft.com. We can kill two birds with one stone, whatever the easiest, if they want it. They can email us as a reminder to answer that question, and MGM, I'll forward it over to you.
Sure.
We could do some research, and then we'll post a blog that answers that question. But glad they enjoyed the presentation. And then I'm looking through the list here to see if there's any good questions. This is a great opportunity. Do not run away while you're doing that survey and vigorously typing up the good feedback, the feedback, then let's make sure that you take this opportunity to ask questions. You got Jim on the hook. We also have Jeff Stuckey here in the background as well, yesterday's presenter, to help answer some of these technical details about how debugging's done. But, Jim, real quick, I'm looking through here. There was a question about the debugger quick reference guide for commands, and they weren't specific in regards to whether they were really looking just for native, which you went over a little bit earlier, but as well managed. Is there references that they could use about SOS as well as just typical commands?
Yeah, so there's the, if you're in the Windows debugger, like I was demoing there, you've always got the help menu, and that basically links to the debugger documentation. That's probably your best source for just straight debugger documentation and the different commands and the reference to all the commands there. They do a great job of documenting everything there. It's being updated, you know, continually. For the SOS command, I don't know that there's a lot of documentation in there on that. There's always the, you know, the SOS, the bang help command, and that basically, and then you can drill down into the further commands saying, like, bang help, you know, GC root, and that'll give you the explanation of the GC root. But it's got a pretty good help system online. There's probably, I'm sure there's some other webcasts and, I think, MFDN articles on, you know, production .NET debugging that go through, you know, more commands with SOS. So there's resources out there other than what's in the help file, but you know, they're out there on the MSDN site. If you just do a search for managed code debugging, you know, I'm sure you'll come up with all kinds of stuff.
I think there was a very interesting question that just because you did so much live, you know, debugging in this presentation here, I think someone may have missed the fact they were asking somewhere in there, what was the command that you used for actually calling out the ASCX file? Do you recall that?
To call out the actual ASPX file.
Just trying to identify maybe where the offending component is.
Yeah, so that was in the, I think when we were looking at the GC root stuff.
Okay.
Right, one of the objects in the chain of references was the actual ASP file. And you can recognize those in the debugger by the class name is ASP, you know, all caps, dot, and then it's your basically your file name. So it was ASP dot, I think it was leakmem underscore ASPX. So that, what that really translates to is, you know, leakmem.aspx file on the file system somewhere.
So you can do a quick search for ASP star if it's still on the screen or something.
And you can also look through the dump heap stat output for, you know, anything that's AST dot, you know, they'll be default.astx, or they'll be, you know, default or, you know, ASCX for controls, that type of thing. So instead of having the dot in there, they'll have the underline. And that's one way to spot them rather quickly.
There's a really cool question here. Do identical applications recompile for 64-bit tend to use more or less than the 32-bit compile? I think they want to throw the word memory in there. If you recompile, now I know AMD 64 and IA 64 are typically are going to be bigger file sizes in general, but I think you're talking about in usage scenarios.
Yeah, in usage scenarios, since the, you know, the objects themselves and you know, pointers and classes are now 64-bit, there is going to be a little more overhead. You know, obviously an int is going to be a bigger int. But I'm not sure what the real numbers are on that. And since you have such a bigger address space available in 64, it's not, we haven't seen it as being a big issue. It may be 20 to 40% tops, additional size.
Not drastic.
It's not drastic, and those numbers are just off the top of my head. I think worst case is, you know, maybe 40% increase, but in what we've seen, it's really not that noticeable.
You know, on this topic, and this is a question that I'm just simply asking because I know that I get this asked to me a lot. In the 32-bit versus the 64-bit, you hit the nail on the head when you said, hey, there's so much more address space available. That tends to make people kind of the first, you know, light bulb that goes off is, hey, is that make debugging that much more complicated? Could you maybe address that topic of maybe was there a learning curve for you guys to go from 32 to 64-bit, or is it pretty much the same, just there's more apples in the bowl?
I think for me, it's definitely just more apples in the bowl, right? Their registers are bigger, your addresses are bigger, you know, things look a little bit different. There's more registers to look at. Really, the only place I would say that it's really different is when you get down to the assembly language level, right? So if you're, so a lot of the stuff, all the memory stuff I did today is probably not going to see a big difference between 64 and 32-bit debugging because a lot of that stuff is kind of obscured for you by the extensions. And you're going to see the same output. It's just going to be, you're going to have bigger address space, obviously, than 64. But when you start getting down into the assembly language, like the exception debugging I did, that's where the differences are a lot more noticeable. And you've got to really know, you know, the 64-bit architecture and the processor registers that you're working with.
Very cool. Well, folks, we still got about 11 more minutes on the air here. So I'm going to challenge you. We still have a good amount of you out there. So if you want to pick the brain of Jim and his colleagues, make sure to get your question in now. Right now, we currently only have one question in the queue. So if you have any questions in regards to debugging, make sure that you do that. I do want to take a quick moment to remind you that we do have Thursday and Friday's presentation. Make sure if you are interested, go and sign up for those as well. I believe the Friday is at 8:30 or 8 o'clock, excuse me, so we'll be in same time, same place. Tomorrow's presentation, it looks like it starts at approximately 9:30, so that should be a pretty decent time. If you're on the East Coast, grab your lunch. Come learn about a little bit more debugging and everything. So ask your questions, bring them on in. Looks like we've got one coming in here, a couple more. Let's do this. Any hints on identifying a memory leak as one that comes from a database, SQL Server, Oracle, for example?
I haven't seen anything that I can relate directly to SQL Server, other than the typical thing that I've seen is that people will query a SQL Server, get a data set back, and then they'll cache that data set, right? So they'll plug that into the cache, and you'll see, you know, obviously growth in your Gen 2. And basically cache. It'll look like a memory leak, but it's really just, you know, people stuffing stuff into the cache. Basically the same process as we use today would be the same kind of thing you would want to do. to, you know, tackle this that issue as well. Start with a clean worker process. Take a look at the memory footprint. You know, run some stress on it or put some load on it, and get your memory up to see what you think of, you know, the leaking state, and then you know, break in and do the same kind of memory analysis that I walked through today. You know, find out which objects are blasting or living in the heap, and go from there.
I think the key to that is that the biggest thing that you guys have a grasp of more than anything is you know what your environment looks like when it's running at its best, or what I consider a baseline. Then at that point, you would know that something's odd, and then you go and investigate it. Is that pretty much, and I mean, from my understanding, you guys have very good baselines of understanding how your app typically works, and then if there's a leak, you figure that out because of the fact that, hey, this is a lot more memory than this app typically uses. Is that
right?
Is that the way that you attack it? Obviously, like you said, there's short-term and long-term allocations. You can't really always just assume because somebody's gone down a different code path that you have a memory leak.
Right. We have a lot of different monitoring that we have in place. We do a lot of log parsing to look for trends there. We get a lot of reports from, not only the IS logs, but from the event logs, like the stuff that Jeff was talking about earlier in the week. And we go from there. So that's some of the stuff we use for our baseline. So we know what it should look like, and we can spot any anomalies, fairly quickly.
Cool. Looks like the questions are flowing in. Hey, slow down there, folks. Hang on now. We'll get to your questions here in just a minute. I'm kidding. Bring the questions on in. Hey, next question. Can you guys give us a quick walkthrough on how to make a dump? Sounds like we're still interested a little bit in doing some post-mortem debugging. Could you maybe give them a quick idea of how to, I guess, go through the process of using 80+? Obviously, you can download Debug Diagnostics, which is part of the toolkit that IS releases at www.isdiagnostics.com. You can use that. That will do that. But can you give them maybe more of the WinDB G80+ scenario to creating a dump?
Sure. It's the same kind of the same process that we started with, right? You attach to your process. You get that initial break. And basically from there, it's just the .dump command, .dump, and then basically it has a /n switch for what kind of memory you want. So usually we do a /ma. We want all the memory. And then just, so .dump /ma space, and then the file path where you're going to save it to on the local system, right? So, and then once it says the dump is completed, you can .detach away, get off your process and get it back up and running, and then you can take that dump file and copy it wherever you want, and then basically just open it up with the Windows debugger. Again, it's just got a, file open and crash dump file.
Very cool.
There you go from there.
Are there any suggestions for novices in the assembly language that you would recommend if somebody's new to that whole area? What would you suggest?
X86, definitely, starting with X86. There's a lot of resources out there on the web. Intel's website, obviously, they've got their programmer's reference guides for the Intel stuff. Those are kind of the reference manuals for their CPUs. They've got all the instructions in there. There's a lot of good third-party sites on getting started, but just digging in and writing some code of your own, and then looking at the actual assembler of it to see what it's actually doing is also another great way. And then just trying to follow with your reference manual, following along to what's going on in the assembler.
Cool. So are there any recommended one-stop shops for debugging information? Looks like a lot of people are looking for references here. Do you actually use any references, or do you have all this stored in your head there?
Well, I often go to the help files in the debuggers. That is the reference, really, for the debuggers. There's a lot of good links off of the debugging website as well.
The self-contained. Download WinDBG from the Microsoft.com and then go to town.
That's your starting point.
Just don't print it. I believe it's about 1,200 pages, is it not?
It's I don't know. It is pretty big. Like I said, I just scratched the surface of what's available there today. There's a lot of stuff you can do with the debuggers. So, look at the reference material. There's also a lot of there are some third party books out there too on debugging, debugging ASP.NET applications, and we've got a lot of resources up on MSDN as well. There's a lot of the CLR developers themselves have blog sites, and they've got some debugging info up there as well too.
What about this question? I've used CLR profile in order to see how the objects are allocated and the actual DNs are disposed of. Do you recommend that?
In a test environment, it's a great tool. You know, if you can use it for, just like profile a single request or something like that. We found it's too heavy to use in any production environment. There's just too much overhead, and it basically kills the performance of the box. So we can't use it in production. We have to use, these manual methods, basically, but it's great for, pre-production and testing, for them to profile a single request or profile, multiple requests like that, and then take a look at the CLR profiler data. It's a good tool, but it's not going to be usable in a production environment, we found.
What is your comparison between those folks from the Visual Studio side of the house versus WinDBG? There was a question about that. What is your overall census of that? Obviously, Visual Studio is expensive or heavy for production environments, but what is your thoughts of using Visual Studio from a debugging perspective?
They've definitely done a lot of work in that area. It's a good debugger if you're working, with the source code and developing at the same time. It's not something we want to use in production, obviously, to install on a production server. So I guess it's a matter of preference. I learned, in the native debuggers, I was debugging native code before I moved to managed code. So it's just I'm using what I'm familiar with, right?
Right. So it's difficult to compare.
Yeah.
When you're not exactly familiar with using Visual Studio.
I've used it a little bit, and it's good. You can do a lot of the same stuff in there, but I definitely think the native debuggers are more powerful.
Absolutely. I have to address that from the perspective of it's the difference between debugging and building of applications, the development process. As part of the development process, Visual Studio is probably considered a first-class debugger. But at operations time or at the actual runtime, you really need to strip that down and be as skinny as you possibly can so that the server doesn't spend, a lot of resources trying to produce or do what you're trying to do. So with that said, it looks like there's a couple of other, what about debugging multi-threaded apps that might be having memory issues? Is there anything different or pretty much the same?
Debugging multi-threaded applications. Well, as far as memory stuff goes, probably not a big difference. ASP.NET applications are all multi-threaded. As multiple requests are coming in, they're handed off to different worker threads. But the native debuggers are suited well for doing multi-threaded debugging because you have some commands in there called, so you can freeze a thread. You can set a breakpoint. You can freeze a thread, so you basically suspend it. It won't run. We use that from time to time when we're working on some multi-threaded stuff. We don't want a certain thread to be allowed to run to completion or something like that. We'll freeze a thread. So there's a lot of commands you can use at the very low level, native level to the threads.
Well, that is an excellent answer, but I hate to do this to you folks, but I tell you what, let me ask you, Jim, will you stay around and answer some more questions in writing?
We can sure try, yeah. We're going to collect all of these, and we'll definitely post them on our blog site if we don't have time to get to them today, but definitely.
But either bit, it sounds like that, Jim, he's going to stay around, so folks don't run away. If you still have a few questions that you want to fire in there, go for it. But as far as being on the air and live, we're going to have to go ahead and shut this guy down tonight, and we'll see this. See you back here bright and early in the morning as well to continue this awesome series of real-world debugging for the Microsoft.com guys. I want to thank all of you for coming today, and I really am enjoying Jim and George and all of you folks from the Microsoft.com side. This is very much entertainment at its best value. So thank you for coming over. Thank you all for attending, and we'll see you here tomorrow. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Chris. I do want to extend a special thanks to Jim for presenting today. And like Chris said, we'd like to invite everyone back here for tomorrow's session about how to tackle problems in dynamically generated assemblies. And with that, I'd like to thank the audience for attending today's TechNet webcast. This does conclude today's session, and the audience may now disconnect from the audio portion of this presentation.